Mr. Chief Justice Jefferson, members of the court, my name's Larry Watts. I represent Larry Rockeford. The case, as it's presented from the district court and the Ninth Court of Appeals, should be reversed and remanded for trial. The reason it should be reversed is that, number one, the case is preempted, or the decision by the trial court and the Ninth Court, that 890041 is applicable, is preempted by federal law, Felder versus Casey. And number two, because if federal law issue aside, the court should find that the notice provisions do apply. There was substantial compliance. By that, I have the opportunity to stand today with the Court of Appeals in Dallas, Corpus Christi, and in Amarillo, and the various opinions that they've written, which find that circumstances substantially the same as in this case provided substantial compliance. The issues that the Court of Appeals found that mandated against preemption were that there was no outcome determinative state statute involved. We say that there was. In the 43 years that I've been doing civil rights cases, and in the 23 years that I've been litigating against Jefferson County on civil rights matters, this is the first case that I've ever seen a notice statute implemented by Jefferson County.
I just want to be clear. Would we reach the preemption issue if we were to agree with your substantial compliance argument, or would that preemption?
Well, the general rule is, as I understand it historically, that you avoid constitutional issues or constitutional conflicts if it can be determined on other bases. I'm not sure that this is sort of like a movie that I'm reminded of Alfred Hitchcock, where he had a dead body that kept showing up. This is sort of what you have here, a constitutional issue that's in the middle of the room, and how do you ignore it? The fact is that the state statute does provide an impediment to the prosecution of 1983 cases. It provides an impediment that you don't see in any type of litigation in federal court. In fact, in the current cases that I have against Jefferson County, 1983 actions in federal court, and in those in the past reaching as far back as 83, I've never seen any type of time notice statute invoked. To say that this is not an outcome determinative case ignores the fact that the only entities or persons protected by the statute are counties and county officials and county in official names. So, short answer to the question, Your Honor, I think that you probably can decide the case without reaching the constitutional issue.
Can I ask you, please?
Justice Lerman.
The statute seems to mandate dismissal if it isn't complied with, and it imposes very specific requirements for delivery of notice. Can you address the argument about whether there's a textual basis for dealing with the substantial compliance actual notice aspect of it? What is your response to that?
I don't think that I could address it or do any better job of commenting on it than has been done by most recently Judge Quinn in the Seventh Court. The point is that the statute is historically designed to make sure that the county has notice so that it can manage its affairs and file an answer. In the Koski case, the Autry case, the Ballesteros case, I'm not telling you anything new, the Turnbow case, the courts have all found that substantial compliance, following the lead of this court in ARTCO and in the the Austin Independent School District case that followed that, sets the guide. You just don't do frivolous acts, and you don't impose barriers or obstacles on parties to litigation. After all, it's not about really in principle and in logic, and it's not about trying to thwart litigation. It's about trying to make sure that everybody has a fair shot at defending themselves. In this case, we, within 30 days, served as the county judge, Carl Griffith. We had an answer filed, and on the 15th day, I think, within the 30-day period. And they waited past the statute of limitations by 8 months to file a motion, plea to the jurisdiction, but to file a motion, and then 10 months after the statute of limitations and 20 days, the 21 days, the court entered a final order, having told us on the 8th that he was going to rule in their favor. Substantial notice, I think, was, there's no difference between this case and Koski, and there's no difference between this case and the others, this Turnbow. In Koski, the Ninth Court seemed to want to distinguish the two cases, Koski from this case, by saying that the actual notice by service to the county judge, which addressed all of the elements of 890041, was somehow inadequate. The Court of Appeals said that Mr. Rockefort never did anything to comply with 890041. Well, in fact, he did the same thing, the minimal amount that was done by Ms. Koski when she filed her suit. He did the same thing that she did there, and that was to have the county judge served and the county attorney file the answer. In addressing, and I'm trying to figure out, Judge Lehrman, Justice Lehrman, how do I address the textual issue? I could read it, and it doesn't say substantial compliance. The courts say substantial compliance. And the courts are there to make sure that something that's meaningful, not frustrating, and just is done. Why the legislature said that you needed to use a key that was shaped like this to get into a hole that's shaped like that and turn it a right way and say hocus pocus, I don't know. But I do know that, and I don't mean any disrespect for the legislature, but I do know that what we have here is a case where these folks knew they were being sued because they got the petition. They knew that it was a 1983 action. It started out as a constitutional claim under the state of Texas Constitution, but it quickly became a 1983 action. Quickly is a relative term sometimes with lawyers, but it became that, and they knew of that, and they filed their answers, and yet they waited past the statute of limitations. When the Ninth Court of Appeals took a little shot at me and said, well, it was...
Well, you can't blame them for taking advantage of what looks to be a potential out in the statute. I mean, if there wasn't literal compliance, it says if the person doesn't give notice as required, the court in which suit is pending shall dismiss the suit on a motion to dismiss. So we can't blame them for looking at this and developing a litigation strategy that would get them out of the case.
Well, I'm certainly after all these years, I know Mr. Rugg, Mr. Wiggins well, and I seldom criticize them in public. But
going to make an exception.
Well, and I won't make that exception today. We'll just have to see what he says, and then I'll come back and address it. But the point is that
The statute is pretty clear. Is all I'm saying.
But so the statute doesn't apply.
It's duplicative. You know, the county. Yes, the county has noticed, but this says you've got to do a couple more things. Dotting T's. You've got to do a few more things. Subject to dismissal if you fail to do them. So why were those not done?
I guess. Well, 89004 has nothing in there about how service or notice will be given. It's only in the 00411. The ground statute, the base statute, has nothing in there. Secondly, there is no reason to believe, and that goes back to your constitutional question, Mr. Chief Justice, there is no reason to believe that suddenly in Rockefort that the preemption doctrine is going to go by the by, and that impedimenta to processing a federal cause of action in state court should suddenly be susceptible to having to be dismissed within 30 days or whenever they get ready to dismiss it or to file their motion because of this particular statute. And that's what makes this, by the way, I think, something different than was construed by the Ninth Court of Appeals. This is an outcome determinative statute. And specifically the way they speak apparently approvingly of Koski. The court never takes Koski on. It says, in fact, that apparently Koski's okay, but that I just didn't do the right thing. I didn't send a request for disclosure or I didn't provide some unknown evidence. But none of that's required even by the statute. I'm required to tell them the name of the party suing them, the court where it's filed. I'm required to tell them the essential data set out that if I'm to tell them anything at all, that is what I told them when they were served with the summons, when the county judge was served with the summons.
So presumably, if you had attached a letter saying the same things, of course, it would have to be by registered or certified mail, according to the statute. It would have cured the problem.
Well,
something like that.
If that had been done, presumably that would have cured the problem. But that's what makes this so particularly confounding. And back to Chief Justice Jefferson's question. Am I required to do those extra things that the state legislature said that I must do when I'm presenting a question that is a federal question and unique to the area? I mean, even this court in a case, the City of Beaumont versus Bouillon back in 1995, this court recognized that 1983 in the federal context occupies the field. It literally controls. And the reason you can't enforce the state constitution is because the legislature hasn't given it any enforceability. But nevertheless, the point that I'm trying to make is that 1983 does occupy the field. It is a case where Congress obviously in 1871 said that this is what Americans have the right, or didn't even say Americans, persons have the right to do when their liberties or properties or fundamental rights have been transgressed by a state actor. A letter would have done it, I suppose. Obviously, if I had gone up and bought the county judge lunch, that wouldn't have done it. If I had taken him my file and let him look at it, that wouldn't have done it. If I had invited the Rockeforts to go there and meet with him, that would have been insufficient. The only thing would have been registered or certified. Now, I don't know exactly if they mean registered through the United States Post Office, like registered mail.
Hand delivering the qualifying letter wouldn't have cut it either.
I don't think so. I mean, I think the legislature... just felt like, I feel a little bit like the old Peanuts cartoon. You know, Lucy says, oh, come on, Charlie, I'm not going to take it away this time. And I think that's basically what happened. I think that, and when the court said that it was a dismissal without prejudice, he was terminated on January the 6, 2006. The lawsuit was filed January 7, 2006. The service was accomplished. The answer was filed on the 22nd, and it was in 2008. Now, I did ask my friend Tom Rugg and Steve Wiggins, why now? But that's extraneous, and that's beyond the record. The point is that it was with prejudice, and that very prejudicial status that was imposed upon Larry Rockefeller in his action trying to implement the Constitution of the United States is demonstrated by what happened.
Thank you, Mr. Watts. Your time has expired.
Yes, and I apologize for trespassing on that.
That's just fine. We'll hear back from you on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Court is ready to hear argument now from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Wiggins will present the argument for the respondents.
Good morning. My name is Steve Wiggins. I represent the respondent in this case, Jefferson County, Texas. And it's my first time before such an honorable court, and I'm privileged and honored to be here this morning. I'll go through briefly, hopefully, an outline of those issues that Mr. Watts has raised just beforehand. And I start by saying that addressing his issue of the fact that 89.0041 of the local government code preempts a federal 1983 claim, we obviously do take exception. The Felder case, if you've had an opportunity, Your Honors, to look at that, it will set out what Mr. Watts has described as an outcome determinative issues, and I would just like to briefly cover those. Number one, just to backtrack, 89.0041 of the local government code is not a prerequisite to filing a lawsuit. It is not an imposition. It does not prevent anybody from filing anything or anyone from filing anything.
Why? What is it that it does? If you get the county judge served, what is it that 89.041 accomplishes?
Mr. Justice, I know 89.0041 appears to be redundant and duplicative. But we thought about this long and hard in trying to interpret this ourselves. Jefferson County looks at this statute, and I've been with the DA's office for more than 20 years, and I've spent 15 years practicing in the civil arena. And I can see the purpose of this statute clearly after working in the area, after dealing with these cases. And the most relevant and pertinent point of that statute is it says, county officials in their official capacity or the county. It's very, very relevant. And the reason why is because when we get served, it says John Jones, constable, individually and in his official capacity. Or it may say John Jones, deputy sheriff, in his official capacity. And then in the body of the pleadings, it's as an individual, he did this. And they're trying to sue the individual and in his official capacity also. So the county needs time. This gives the county, and I think the 30-day period gives us an opportunity. When these individuals are served only, they don't serve the county necessarily. So we want notice.
So is the argument that you need, 30 days additional notice time for the county to consider this?
Well, precisely, Your Honor.
If that's what it is, why wouldn't you go, if you've been served with the citation and you say, well, now we've got an answer day and so forth, and you're going to go ask the court for relief. Maybe you stay the case for 30 days.
Well, the point being is the county may not be served. county officials only may be served, or individual employees may be served.
What's the internal procedure? I mean, a county official gets a lawsuit and he sits on it? Or does he hire his own personal counsel? I don't think that's the...
Precisely. This may be an issue, hiring own personal counsel. And there's been disputes over that, whether we are entitled to represent the county officials, each and every one of them, whether they take it to their private attorney as well.
What's the internal procedure there, though, in Jefferson County?
Ordinarily, Mr. Justice, we get served. The county judges serve. And if the county judges served, then representing the county. The county judge is not necessarily served if they serve an individual in his official capacity. But if the county judge is served, then obviously it helps us as the legal counsel for the county to go through and see who is actually going to be made a party to this and why.
If this were purely a federal suit, if it were brought in federal court under Section 1983, and the 89.0041 notice was not presented in the context of that case, the case would not have been dismissed. Is that correct? So why is this not outcome? Why is the impact of this statute not outcome determinative under Felder versus Casey?
Well, the Ninth Court of Appeals puts certain issues in their opinion that I think Your Honor is very relevant. Number one, it's not a prerequisite to filing the suit.
Number two, it doesn't
discriminate against any specific claim.
Not at all.
The language of the statute is quite clear, and it places no conditions.
But I'm just saying, if it were brought in federal court, and this 89.0041 notice was not given, that would not dispose of the case. It wouldn't be subject to dismissal for failure to comply with 89.0041. So why is the application of that statute not outcome determinative under Felder versus Casey? It seems like it is.
Well, potentially it could be. But they have the right, Your Honor, to refile. They have a right, if they don't comply with the law, if they don't comply with a simple couple of letters, registered or certified mail, that's really all the statute is trying to achieve, in my opinion. If they fail to do two simple letters, and the case is dismissed upon motion by the defense, then they can refile it.
But in this case, can they refile it?
In my opinion, no. In the opinion of the Ninth Court of Appeals, no, Your Honor.
Seems like the statute provides for gamesmanship as opposed to good lawyering.
Gamesmanship?
Yeah.
This statute has been the object of debate for several years. And to use it, it may seem like we're sneaking in through the back door, but it's the law. And most honorable justices, we're just trying to seek some clarity as well. We want clarity, and we want simplicity if we can get it. We'll follow the law.
What happened in the case in the 2 years before the motion to dismiss was filed?
I'm sorry?
What happened in the case during that 2 year period?
What happened in the case?
Right. I mean, discovery undertaken and so forth, and
Yes, there was.
So
yes.
Knowing that your position was going to be that the court lacked subject matter jurisdiction, you nonetheless went ahead with working on the case.
I'm a little hard of hearing, and I apologize.
Knowing that from your position, you say that the court lacked subject matter jurisdiction from the get-go because there was no notice.
That was our original motion, yes, sir. It was a plea to the jurisdiction.
It was filed 2 years after the suit was filed.
I don't recall exactly when it was filed, Your Honor, but jurisdiction can be raised at any time, even on appeal.
Well, did you substantially invoke the resources of the court? Did you go to the court for hearings and and deposition or a trial schedule?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
How involved did you get the court?
How involved?
From the time the lawsuit was filed to the time you filed your motion to your plea to
both, the both myself and Mr. Rugg, who is the first assistant, are the only two that handled this case, the only two that worked on this case. There was some discovery. There was some depositions. It was quite, we proceeded with the case as we normally would in any defense. And my expectation, I thought, because in the Ballesteros case, they had also said the plea to the jurisdiction was granted because it's a jurisdictional issue. This is the thing that started the whole landslide. Is it jurisdictional? Jefferson County's position from the very beginning. That's why it's not like we were hiding behind a rock to ambush anybody. But when other court cases started to appear like Ballesteros, it said, well, maybe it is jurisdictional. Maybe we need to find out.
But even if you were hiding behind a rock, isn't that what lawyers do? I mean, you're supposed to represent your client.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know that anyone's going to criticize you for representing your client properly and waiting till the statute runs and then bringing it up. I mean, that's what a lawyer's supposed to do.
Your Honor, that's the whole purpose behind limitations, too, as well. And
sure.
And we don't, you know,
but
it
the statute wasn't. This statute permits that to happen when you've been in there litigating. Everybody's had notice. There's no question of whether you're going to have individual lawyers or county. And I think that's what we're here about, is not your exactly. tactics, but what does this statute do? If you get served on this and you have the county official served, whatever capacity the official is in, individual or official capacity, and a default judgment is rendered, then it's a default judgment, I take it. This statute doesn't protect against that, does it?
My knowledge.
This says because you have to answer and move to be dismissed for this statute to be effective.
Precisely. You must do something affirmative.
So it looks like it doesn't really afford much protection against anyone, but rather is just a hoop that the legislature has required somebody to jump through. Because if your county official doesn't bring it to you, doesn't bring it to any lawyer, you're going to get a default judgment, maybe a motion for new trial, maybe granted, maybe not granted.
And part of it, to carry your thought a little further, part of it is for us to be able, as a county entity, to mount a unified defense, to find out exactly who's being blamed for what and in what capacity they're being blamed.
Well, that's in the lawsuit when it's served, isn't it? They serve the lawsuit on the county judge?
Yes, sir, but they don't always serve the county when they're suing individuals, even in their official capacity. So we may not even get a copy of it.
But whoever gets it, it's going to specifically say in there what capacity they're being sued in as a general rule.
As a general rule, yes, Your Honor. That's precisely correct. Precisely. But to continue with the notion that this is outcome determinative in a federal case, again, the Ninth District Court of Appeals has set out the elements which I think are very pertinent, and they don't obstruct anyone or prevent them from proceeding. All they have to do is just follow the law, follow the law. And it's, moreover, it's this statute is more of a procedural mechanism, and Felder recognizes that. And the case that we cited, Johnson, in the Johnson case, is that it is procedural. It does nothing more than allows the state courts to conduct their own business and not necessarily set up a tribunal that specifically would cater to federal courts. As I say in the brief, you know, the federal government pretty much has to take the state court as it finds it. And this is our position. It doesn't impede on anybody filing anything All it's asking for is a couple of letters under state procedural rule for notice. For notice.
You indicate that a purpose of the statute is to assure that the county gets notice if the official is served. But if you are, if the county judge and the county attorney are served with summons, is the purpose that's trying to be served by the statute fully protected?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. If the district attorney's office is served, and the district attorney, as all of these cases pretty much refer, if the district attorney is served, they're ordinarily the counsel who does the defense work. And it puts us on notice, gives us notice, because we're usually the legal arm of the county government. And it lets us, it gives us notice and what we need to do, not just as defense counsel, but what the county needs to do. So this benefits us. If they were to serve us with notice, just like they serve the county judge, that would satisfy, in my opinion, giving us proper ability to prepare a defense.
But I just want to be clear, if you get the summons itself, if the county judge and the attorney get the summons itself, the notice would serve no additional purpose.
If we get the summons.
Right.
But we only get a summons.
Sometimes you don't. But
sometimes we don't. Right.
But if you do, then there's nothing to serve by the
notice. In that situation, I agree completely. Yes.
So would it be your position then that if you actually get it, then the statute has been complied with?
Ideally, Your Honor, under every circumstance, if an individual who's sued in his official capacity is served with process, if he brings that to us, if he or she advises the DA's office, if they're being sued in their official capacity, yes, it would meet that criteria.
That would fulfill the statute.
For an official being sued in their official capacity. But if they're suing the county, we ordinarily, and I say ordinarily, we get the citation, the summons, from the county judge, because that's the one that is appointed as agent for service for the county.
So if the county judge gets it and the county's being sued and then brings it to you so that you both have the citation there, does that fulfill the statute's purpose in your view?
If there is no individual sued in his official capacity.
Right.
Yes. If it's just the Jefferson County, if it just says John Doe versus Jefferson County, if we get it, Your Honor, yes, that would satisfy us, and I think it would satisfy the statute as well.
Well, would a motion to dismiss then be appropriate in those cases? Should it be granted?
Well, should it be dismissed? If they don't comply with the notice, yes. I think right now my position
has to be that.
It would help us out. It's not duplicative or superfluous. It does, this kind of notice would indeed help the county government form its defense and get all the parties and its the information and straight. It would certainly assist us.
If the same day the county official sued in his individual capacity is served, on that same day you get a call from the plaintiff's lawyer saying, I sued X in his official capacity, and here's the style of the case, here's the case number, here's the date, here's the name of the person filing, and tells you that over the phone, does that satisfy the purpose of 89.0041?
I would say no, Your Honor, and the reason why it would not.
Get the same information.
Well, the information's not set out as we need it. We need the case number. We need all that stuff to make sure, if indeed it is conveyed to us in that manner completely and accurately, then we would get the information. Now, whether or not it would comply with the law, no. Clearly it doesn't.
So substantial compliance never works in your scenario, correct? I mean, the
letter, I'm sorry?
Substantial compliance never works under any scenario. In your view, the letter of this statute cross the I's, dot the D's, and all those good things.
With all due respect, Your Honor, substantial compliance and so-called actual notice, even if it's statutory like it is under the Tort Claims Act, we know that's created problems. Haven't we seen those time and time again? If you send them written notice under the Tort Claims Act, you've satisfied that responsibility. But then there's this thing called actual notice, and we're still litigating that today after decades. It's not clear. And to say substantially he complied or actual notice, he received actual notice because somebody picked up a phone and called him, this opens up a whole new Pandora's box of actual notice litigation.
I'm just trying to figure out how what the parameters of your position are. I think you told Justice Johnson that if a county official is sued in his official capacity and gets served, and you get the service papers, including the summons, then that satisfies the statute. I think that's what you said. I'm asking if you get that same information by phone, does that satisfy the statute? And at the same time?
Your Honor, briefly, I don't think it satisfies the statute. I don't believe in this partial compliance or actual notice. Does it satisfy the statute? Not according to the way it's written.
So maybe the legislature just wanted a particular way to do it, laid out with all the T's crossed and I's dotted, and then we don't have to worry about how far down the road do you go and where do you slice this cantaloupe?
Perhaps they did. Yes, sir.
Any further questions? Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you.
Counsel, do we really want to draft an actual notice or substantial compliance requirement on here and then litigate it? As opposing counsel says, we continue litigating the actual notice part of the Tort Claims Act. Would you address that?
The statute requires that when you sue the county, as we did here, you serve the county judge. He's who you serve. We did that. The county was the only defendant in this case. Do you want to have that extra debate? I don't know. I think, frankly,
and the reason I ask that, we go beyond this one case.
I understand
that. We're talking
that.
About your, counties your policy and county officials.
Body, but I think that the debate is not. I think that the debate is resolved in the constitutional issue by saying that you can't impose in state court a condition on a 1983 litigation that's not existent and isn't imposed by the federal. So the counties have never done badly in federal court under 1983. In fact, they do pretty well.
Counsel, let me ask you.
I didn't answer your question. I'll come back to that.
Okay. Justice Wainwright's got a good question.
I'll let you be sure and answer Justice Johnson's good question too here. But let me ask you, outcome determinative. That point, is that about substance or is it about procedure or it's about both? And to answer that, let me ask you to address this question. Assume that state service of process as required in Texas and Jefferson County is harder than federal service of process. And you have a Section 1983 claim, you could file it in state court or you could file it in federal court. It's easier in federal court. You file it in state court and don't cross all the T's and your case gets bounced out. Is that preempted?
Well, I think we'd...
And is that like a notice provision that may be procedural rather than substantive?
I don't think this is a procedural notice provision. By the way, Felder pretty well takes a shot at that. Felder sweeps with a very broad broom, by the way, and has some very noble and language. I think that if they give you different rules in Jefferson County, which I think I'm getting right now, by the way, in Jefferson County on how to go forward. I mean, from now on, I'll file all my suits against the county in federal court until we get some sort of disposition that helps Mr. Wiggins to be clear that this anomaly, out of all the 16 or 17 cases I've had, won't occur again to me. But I think that if service is harder in Jefferson County than it is in state court, than it is in federal court when I sue the county under 1983, I think that's a due process issue. I think it's an equal protection issue.
Well, it's not just harder for 1983 claims or in Jefferson County. It's harder in state court, generally just presume, for any civil lawsuits.
Well, I think court. That creates a real issue about uniformity of application. One of the things about procedural rules is that the rule is applies to everybody in the same way. And this particular statute only favors the county and only favors county officials. And what it does is, he said, well, because it's not a pre... I'm not hitting your question, though, am I?
I think you pretty much are. Now, are we on the same page in assuming that if the service is a little more difficult in state court? I'm not saying it's arbitrary or unreasonable. It just requires a couple more hoops to jump through.
Well, then you want to go to Harris County, or maybe you'll never want to go to Jefferson County at all.
But my question is that outcome determinative? Does that
I think
mean
so.
It's preempted? Because
I think
service
so.
May be a little harder under state court.
I think so. I think that, and I think Felder says that. Felder doesn't simply say, by the way, that preemption deals with procedural versus substantive. It's sort of hard at my age to say you're a child of anything, but I'm a child of 1983. When I graduated from Baylor Law School in 1967, that's I got into 1983. In those days, it wasn't a very popular issue, but we've been in it. And the point is that you don't have the hoops of pre-notice, and you don't have the notice provisions coming after the fact in 1983 actions. I'm not going to trespass this time. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.